Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Final Lap Podcast. This is Josh. I'm here as always with Sam. Sam, how are you doing and how was your weekend?
I'm doing good. It's great to be back. We had a great time in Miami. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Let's get right into it. You had F1 at Miami this weekend. Lando Norris gets his first career win by 7 seconds over Max Verstappen after a mid-race safety car moved Norris ahead of Verstappen, and Verstappen had already pit. Norris hadn't pit yet, so it vaulted Norris past Max, and then he just drove away after that just on pure pace. He drove away from Max, 7 second win, like we said. What do you think this win does for Lando's career?
I think it does more for his legacy, I guess. I don't know if it's too early to use that word, but just because of how young he is, but I think it does more for his reputation amongst the fans than it does in the paddock. I think everyone there knew his talent and knew that he was capable of winning races, so I don't think this is going to fetch him a bigger contract or more interest from other teams or anything like that. But I think the fans now see that he's capable of closing the deal and that he's capable of being winning a lot more races in his career.
Yeah, he's now shedding the nickname, the Lando No Wins nickname, instead of Lando Norris. It, like you said, he seems happy at McLaren. McLaren seems happy to have him, so I don't think he's going to be looking for any new career paths because of this win. But I just think it's good for him, and it does, you know, there have been some fans who have doubted his abilities because he hasn't got that win yet. He's had a few chances and he just hasn't got it done. But I think this win kind of puts all of those rumors to bed and all of those, he can't do it. He can't get the big win, or he kind of chokes in the big situations. I think this win silences all that doubt, certainly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to be under pressure from Max, you know, back at that restart, 99% of the time recently, within a lap or two, Max would have been back ahead and would have coasted to an easy win, even though he started a restart in second. But Lando was able to hold him off, and that's a testament to the pace of the McLaren this weekend as well and those upgrades that they brought.
Yeah, and we'll get into the McLaren a little bit later, but do you think that this will jumpstart Lando multiple wins this season, or do you think that this is it for this season? But I think, obviously, he will get more wins throughout his career, but do you think he has anything more this season, or do you think this is it?
I think McLaren definitely has something more this season. I think either him or Oscar Piastri, I think, will win a race like at some point going forward from here. I don't know. The Red Bull, I think, is still the dominant car and for further notice, and I think they'll still win the majority of the races the rest of the way. Ferrari seems to be very confident in some upgrades that they're bringing to Imola. I saw that they said they are going to be capable of winning races and being right there with Red Bull. So I think to predict more than another win or two would be a little much at this stage, but it's absolutely possible that either one of those drivers could get a win for McLaren before the end of the season.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think this kind of brings us to another question, but do you think McLaren has jumped Ferrari so far this season? Because we've been pretty confident that Ferrari has been the second best team on the grid right behind Red Bull this season. But do you think McLaren has jumped Ferrari now, or do you think their level, and do you think McLaren, you know, has a chance to fight like this more often with Red Bull, or do you think that this was just track specific, just only for Miami?
I think they very well could with these new upgrades, but I think it's too early to tell because of Miami, because of the way the track is, between it being a temporary street circuit and, you know, the weather conditions that they have there, the heat, the wind, everything else. I think it's too early to tell whether or not this McLaren is consistently a car that can compete for wins. I think it's clear that it's better than it was before the upgrades, but I think it's going to be tough to say how much better until we see it on another circuit. Imola will be a great test for that.
Yeah, I think we gotta see it, you know, again, see how close they can get to the Red Bulls again. But I think McLaren has definitely taken a step forward. I would almost put them, you know, past Ferrari at this point. They didn't even have the upgrades last time out in China, and they seemed faster than Ferrari there when no one expected them to be, and now they have the upgrades, and they were fast all weekend. I was kind of surprised when they qualified back in fifth and sixth for the race, but they're definitely very close to Red Bull at this point, and we just got to see what happens with the next Red Bull upgrades.
Yeah, and you know, I think it'll be interesting to see, too, if these upgrades can hold consistency from track to track. I think, obviously, between the second half and the first half of last year, McLaren had a huge upgrade and you know, made up a lot of ground to the top of the field. But they've still been kind of track dependent. There are some weekends where they're closer to Aston Martin and Mercedes, and then there are other weekends where they're up there fighting with Red Bull and Ferrari. I'm interested to see if these new upgrades are more uniform across the track so they can be consistent podium team.
Yeah, I think so. And I think even before the upgrades, like we were talking about in China, they were fast all weekend there. You know, Lando getting the sprint pole, obviously he lost it out and it wasn't in the rain. So that kind of neutralizes things a bit from a car standpoint. But they seemed faster in China, which is, you know, a different circuit than what we've seen so far this year. And then now McLaren, or now in Miami, they were also obviously very fast. And, you know, even Oscar probably would have been fighting for that win if he didn't have his issues and, you know, pit right when the safety, it pit at a bad time for the safety car, if he would have stayed out a little longer. But yeah, I think McLaren is definitely closing the gap to Red Bull. And I do think they're past Ferrari at this point, and they're well ahead of Mercedes and Aston Martin. They've definitely taken that battle by the horns, and they're very far ahead of both of them.
Yeah, and I think another reason for excitement is just the pure talent of the driver duo of McLaren. Obviously, they don't have a world champion like Red Bull or Mercedes do, or Aston Martin for that matter. But between the two drivers, I think they have as much raw talent as pretty much any team on the grid. And you know, they're still very young, they've still got a lot to learn, but they both have potential championship material in them.
Yeah, and I know Oscar is very talented, obviously. He was even, you know, beating Lando with half the upgrades, where Lando had all the upgrades at some points this weekend. But it is interesting to note that Lando, in sprint and normal races, he's beating Oscar 6-1 this year, and he's almost double him in points, which is kind of surprising with how well we've seen Oscar doing this year. But is Lando just that much better, or do you think it's still Oscar kind of just, you know, he's not his rookie season anymore, but he still doesn't have nearly the experience that Lando has at this point?
I think Lando is the better driver at this point, but also there have been some circumstances of bad luck for Oscar, or like this right here in Miami, you know, he ended up on the wrong side of the strategy, whereas Lando won out even though Oscar was up in second until then. And then he has the incident with Sainz that drops him back to the back of the pack. There's just been some instances of bad luck, but Lando definitely is the number one there right now.
Yeah, I think Lando has definitely cemented his place as number one at that team. It was a good week for RB. We had Yuki finishing 7th in the race and 8th in the sprint. Daniel finished 4th in the sprint race, but he struggled during the race, finishing 15th. What do you think the difference was for Daniel between race qualifying and race, and then the sprint qualifying and the sprint? Because they seemed like two very different cars almost.
Yeah, it was very odd. I think the big takeaway from them this weekend was that they're clearly the best of the rest now, which after the first few weeks of the season, I thought that was Haas, and they still have had a very impressive season in my eyes based off their resources and what they can do. But RB has shown some great pace. I mean, finishing 4th in the sprint is unbelievable. You know, I would have been very tough to hold that position for a full race, but I'm sure they still would have got solid points with Danny there. And then Yuki finished 7th in the feature race. That just shows that they have that pace. And you know, if Danny can really keep gaining that confidence back with the way Yuki's been driving this year, they can be a real force. They can even, I don't know if they can catch Aston Martin for 5th, but they can be consistently in the points and really bring the fight to some other teams.
Yeah, honestly, RB and Haas kind of looked faster than Aston Martin at certain points this weekend. So it'd take a lot, but they could theoretically catch Aston Martin in that battle for, that would be 5th. It is weird how much Daniel was different, you know, on Sunday versus on Saturday. And I know there is some stuff with that car being bad back in dirty air, being very bad when it's stuck behind people. So it could have just, you know, been that. And but the qualifying was where it was really weird, because it was almost like, you know, Lando had that same thing in sprint qualifying where he just had a really bad lap on tires that no one really knows why they were so bad. It's just like he just had no grip the entire lap. And that's the same way it was for Daniel. And Daniel even talked about that. He talked to Lando about it, and they were kind of feeling the same things in the car. So it's just really odd that, you know, they were kind of having some dud tires that just wouldn't turn on like that in the qualifying sessions this week.
Yeah, it is very odd. I will say, I mean, he did start last in the race and finish 15th. So even though Logan Sargeant went out of the race, I think he still would have finished ahead of him anyways. So make up 5 spots during the race. I know that's against some back markers, but it's still not a bad performance during the race. It's just disappointing qualifying. And then on top of that, the 3-place grid penalty from China.
Yeah, that penalty certainly didn't help. We'll go to Esteban Ocon scores the first points of the season for Alpine. Do you think it's been surprising that Alpine has scored a point before Williams has so far this season? Because, you know, Williams was pretty good last year, and Alpine looked so bad at the beginning of this year that it seemed like Williams would be far and away better than Alpine and have more points or be higher up on the standings than Alpine so far this season.
It definitely is. I think maybe it shouldn't be as much as it is because Alpine's a team that does have resources, and they have shown recently that they're capable of being a lot better than they started this season. So maybe it shouldn't be such a surprise to see them make up ground fairly quickly. But I will say, I think Williams so far, Williams and Mercedes, I think, have been the two biggest disappointments of the season. You know, I thought, obviously, it's a little bit tough with Sargeant's lack of performance as one of the drivers, but you would think that they were going to make up a lot more ground than they did over the offseason. It seems like they've regressed, in fact, and same goes for Mercedes as well, actually. But yeah, I'm very surprised given the way Alpine started. I thought they were going to be stuck at the very back for most of the season.
Yeah, and Williams, they did, you know, before the season say that they were behind on their car development, that they were running a little behind, so they didn't get everything out of, you know, the preseason testing. But you'd think they would have figured things out by this point. And then you have earlier in the season the stuff with, you know, they didn't have a spare chassis. It just doesn't seem like they're in a very good place right now, which is really weird because at the end of last year, I saw them as, you know, one of the teams that was rising the quickest, and not that they would be fighting for podiums at this point, but that they would be consistently up there fighting for points like with RB and Haas. And it's weird that they've taken this turn, you know, back south.
Yeah, it is. I that start of the season was so bad, I didn't think that they were going to come back from it, Alpine. But you got to give them credit. They've shown consistent improvement throughout the year. And, you know, I think it'll still be a battle to really get much better than this because the gap is so big to the top 5 teams. But, I mean, they could be up there with RB and Haas fighting for points a lot of these weekends.
Yeah, I think by the end of the season they could be fighting with that RB and Haas in that battle, but I don't think they'll catch up to them just with how far behind they are on points at this point in the season. Speaking of Mercedes, it's kind of weird to say this considering he finished 6th, but I feel like Lewis had a pretty good day in that race after all the troubles that he had in the sprint race, you know, fighting with Magnussen and all that nonsense. But Lewis had he finished 6th, which isn't good for him, but it's good with that Mercedes, and it seemed better because he was fighting with Perez. He was keeping tabs on him pretty much the whole race. It's Perez and the Red Bull. Obviously, this wasn't Red Bull's best track, but still being close to them is a good sign for Lewis, I think.
He was, and he finished 0.2 of a second behind Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari.
Yeah, Carlos had that penalty, though, that 5-second penalty, so.
No, that is true, but still an incredible race from him. I think it's a bad sign, too, for Sergio Perez that he's struggling with a Mercedes right now, even one that's driven by Lewis Hamilton. You know, he qualified 4th behind both Ferraris and his teammate once again, and now he's really didn't make up any ground during the race. He was closer to the guys behind him than he was those Ferraris and Max, and of course Lando later in the race. But yeah, I mean, on the one hand, he was fighting with the race winner for a lot of the first half of the race. It was him and Lando Norris battling each other for position. But he also didn't make up any ground in what's supposed to be the fastest car in the grid.
Yeah, it was kind of odd because I didn't hear of any like damage to his car or anything like that. Like in Australia, he had obviously had some damage to that car that kept him from moving back up more. This week, I didn't hear anything about any damage to his car that would have kept him back there. And I feel like he has been better this year than he was last year. So it's kind of a weird performance from Perez. He moved up to fourth after that penalty to Sainz, but still kind of weird for him to be back there fighting with Lewis rather than challenging the Ferraris and the McLarens and his teammate ahead.
Yeah, it just felt like a very anonymous race from him, like he was just kind of there, but was never really taking the fight for the podium spots. Like I thought he would, honestly. Even qualifying fourth, I thought he would end up passing both those Ferraris and finishing second, but it's been a couple races. He did start the season very well, but that's been a couple races now where he's struggled to take the fight to Ferraris and McLarens, even being in the better car.
Yeah. What do you think about Miami as a track? I know Miami gets a lot of, I would say a lot of hate for, it's not, people don't think it's the best racing track. They think the races there have been kind of boring, kind of slow. What do you think about it as a track? Because I actually, especially going there, and this is our second time being there, but being down in turn 11 at the end of that really long straight, you know, getting to see all those battles and all those passes that are happening right there, I think Miami is a fine track. It's obviously never going to be a world class, you know, your Interlagos or Silverstone or that kind of thing, but I think it's a fine track, and I think it does its job. I don't think it should be out of F1 by any means.
No, I agree. I get why people don't like it, because the event seems to be catered more to the celebrities and the VIP fans and whatnot. But I think the track has gotten, I don't know, they really haven't made any changes to it. I was going to say it's gotten better, but it's effectively the same track. I think just we've been fortunate to get some better racing on it. I mean, this year, I do wonder if the safety car hadn't have come out with Lando Norris taking the lead, if we would have looked back at the race a little bit differently, just as far as maybe not being as entertaining of a race as it was. But the sprint race was still very entertaining, and there was action on track. I mean, even before the safety car, there was a battle between Oscar and the two Ferraris. There was battling between Lando and Sergio Perez, and there was a lot of battling further back with Lewis Hamilton and Nico Hülkenberg and some other guys. So I think it's improving. Like I said, they haven't really made any changes, so I don't know if that's just luck of getting better racing or not, or maybe teams are figuring out how to drive the track better. But I think it is getting better, and I'm excited to see more races there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I personally, I would have still said I really enjoyed the race even if Lando didn't win. I still would have thought that the track produced fine racing, and maybe you don't see some of that stuff on TV like we did at the track down in turn 11 where a lot of the passing happens. So maybe that's just something that's not getting communicated through TV to people not at the track watching at home. But I thought Miami was fine. And also on sprint race weekends, I know a lot of people don't like sprint race weekends, but as someone who's going, as a fan going to the event, I really enjoy sprint race weekends because you get something important every single day. You get sprint qualifying on Friday, which, you know, qualifying session, I'd rather watch that than practice. You get a sprint race and then another qualifying session on Saturday, which I'd rather watch sprint race than practice three. Qualifying obviously is going to be the same, and then the race on Sunday. So you get something very good and important and fun to watch every single day. And I personally really enjoyed that as a fan attending the event.
As did I. I mean, I was there on Friday, and it makes a world of difference having something, you know, more meaningful as a fan. There's only so much as a fan that you can take out of practice. I know the teams get a lot of very important information, and they can get a better idea of what the field is going to look like for the rest of the week. But as a fan, not having that information, there's only so much you can get out of it. And it made Friday a lot more fun to see the sprint qualifying, kind of get an idea of what the order was going to look like for the weekend, and just get some action out there. I think that was a big game changer. And yeah, I get why the teams don't love it always, especially on certain tracks. But as a fan, I definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, I understand from a team's point where they're coming from. You know, you have the possibility for a wreck in the sprint or something bad to happen, and it just costs more money to do these sprint races rather than just a normal race weekend. But I would much rather see all of, like, I would rather watch people pushing it to the limit in a sprint qualifying session on Friday rather than practice. And I know as a hardcore fan, you can get a lot out of practice. I get a lot out of watching the practices, just seeing what people are doing on, you know, race trim, on qualifying time, stuff like that. But I would rather watch the drivers pushing it to the limit and giving it everything on a sprint qualifying session in a sprint race rather than two practice sessions, personally.
No, I agree. That's what we're there for, to see them push it to their limit and see them get the most out of the car, see the best drivers in the world with the best cars. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Yeah, well, let's go to our personal podiums for Miami. I'll let you go first with this one.
Well, we actually, looking at the document here, we had the same podium. It's number one, Lando Norris. I mean, how can you not? Gets his first win. Obviously gets some luck with the safety car, but also, you know, his strategy played right into it, and they held pace. They held off the Red Bull of Verstappen once they got the lead, and even before that, they were right there with the Red Bull of Perez. So an incredible race from him. So excited to see him get his first win. Second had Yuki Tsunoda, finished seventh and beat Russell in the Mercedes on pure pace. A great race from him and a great race for the RB team. And then third, Esteban Ocon, first points for Alpine this year, as we mentioned. But I did want to give shout-outs to Oscar Piastri, who was doing incredible before he had some issues with the strategy and then with the incident with Carlos Sainz as well. But he showed incredible pace up there in second, managing to hold off the Ferraris for a while. And I think had the race played out differently with the safety car and whatnot, he could have gotten a podium and had a great race. And then Daniel Ricciardo, just for the sprint alone, finishing fourth in the sprint in that car is a great feat. Even though we didn't have the featured race that we were hoping for, P4 in the sprint is enough to get him an honorable mention.
Yeah, Ricciardo holding those guys off, holding signs off for seemingly the whole race in the sprint race in the RB was a really great feat and really fun to watch. And I'm happy for Ricciardo getting good points and, you know, showing that he still has what it takes. Like we said, I don't know what happened on, you know, qualifying in the race, but he definitely showed that he still has it given the right situation and putting himself in a good spot. Last thing for Miami, I just want to share, we were down there and we will have some content and stuff coming out on it soon on our Instagram and on our YouTube page. So I just wanted to make sure that I put that in there as well. Let's move over to the NASCAR race at Kansas. Kyle Larson won a thriller, an all-time race, and the closest finish in NASCAR history by 0.001 seconds over Chris Buescher. The finish between the top four was so close that from first to fourth would have been the closest finish in Kansas history, let alone first to second. That finish was insane and really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, what a finish it was. That's great to see. I mean, I think we're going to talk about this later about mile and a half tracks, but historically, they've been my least favorite tracks on the NASCAR calendar. It just feels like there hasn't been a lot of competitive racing most of the time. And they're just very cookie cutter tracks, very similar looking, very similar feeling, but they found something in this aero package and they've got it right. And, these are some of my favorite races now on the calendar because you're getting these, obviously no race finishes close as this, but, you're getting closer finishes, you're getting more action throughout the race. And, you're getting, you know, you saw four or five wide out there at times. Guys moving up and down the track trying to find the best groove. Very entertaining racing.
Yeah, Larson's move around Buescher in 3 and 4 for that win was one of the most impressive moves I've seen in NASCAR in a long time. He just held it right up against that wall, and it was either crashing or winning for him. And he obviously ended up with the win. That move though was just insane to have the ability and the confidence to put it up there, knowing that that could have ended in disaster, but it ended up, you know, producing the best finish we've probably ever seen in NASCAR. This was Larson's second win of the season, moving him to first in the standings and first in total laps led throughout the season. Do you think Larson is the favorite to win the championship right now over Hamlin? He's got 3 wins. Byron has 3 wins. Larson, like we said, only has 2. Or do you think someone else other than those 3 would be the favorite to win the championship right now?
I think Kyle Larson's the favorite just because he's shown that he can do it on any, pretty much any kind of track. Obviously, some of the other guys can too. Denny Hamlin's won basically everywhere in NASCAR. But right now, I think Kyle Larson's the driver to beat. Hendricks had a lot of very strong weekends, so they've shown pace on a lot of these tracks, and I trust Kyle Larson right now to get it done more than anybody else.
Yeah, I agree. I think almost everyone feels that Larson is the most talented driver on the grid. But, you know, Byron with 3 wins, Byron's been really weird because he has the wins, but like the last few weeks, it doesn't seem like he's been particularly close to you know, fighting for the win, whereas Larson obviously won this week and was just barely second the week before. So I would still be between Larson and Hamlin to me. I would give Larson the slight edge, though, A, because he has won a championship and Hamlin hasn't, and B, because he is a little more versatile than Hamlin, especially so far this year. I know Hamlin, he might have had that win had things stayed green, but he didn't end up with it. And Larson, you know, has wins on multiple different tracks now versus Hamlin only has wins on the short tracks.
Yeah, the Byron thing is an interesting one. I mean, a few weeks ago, he would have been my answer to the question. 3 wins early in the mm-hmm. season, I thought he was yep. looking unstoppable. And that hit, like I said, Hendrick's been looking great all year. But, I mean, this week finishes 23rd was really not a factor at any point. Finishing behind, you know, Corey Heim's part-time driver and then some other guys that aren't usually up there. So, really surprising to see him be a non-factor, and we'll see if he can pick it up these next few weeks.
Yeah, it was very odd, too, because in practice, Byron was fastest in, you know, 5-lap average, 10-lap average, just fastest overall. So it was really weird that I know he had that issue in qualifying where he kind of got up in the wall, but it was weird that he never really seemed to work his way through the pack during the race and fight for that win. He was just kind of back there. It was really odd. We touched on a little bit, but why do you think Kansas and other mile-and-a-half tracks seem to work so well with this next-gen car?
Yeah, I don't know what it is they're doing with the aero package, but whatever it is they're doing it right. I mean, like I was saying, you're getting some of the best racing you've ever seen on these tracks, and I think this is what NASCAR really needed to take the next step as far as an entertainment product, I guess. I mean, you're always going to get fun racing on the super speedways. You're always going to get some interesting racing on the road courses and whatnot. But these mile-and-a-half tracks are kind of the backbone of the calendar, even though there's less than there used to be. And this is what NASCAR needed, I think, to really become something that the fans, other than the diehards, enjoy watching week to week and something they look forward to.
Yeah, I think the mile-and-a-halves are by far the best track, especially with this next-gen car. I think it's weird because there still is the aero blocking on these mile-and-a-halves, like we've discussed and like what the big issue is with the short tracks. But I guess because there's more room on these mile-and-a-halves and you're carrying more speed, you can kind of work your way around that aero blocking, and it actually makes for good racing instead of bad racing. Like at the beginning of the race in stage one, Larson and Chastain were battling side by side for seemingly 40 or 50 laps, pretty much the whole stage, really. There was a battle for the lead side by side, and it's crazy that it works this way with these cars, whereas in short tracks it doesn't. And it's just got to be because you can get these runs and you can kind of manage it better, and you can work your way around it a little bit more when you're the trailing car, you know, fighting to pass that leading car on these mile and a halfs versus on short tracks.
Yeah, and we've touched on the short track problems before. I think that's really the only thing the only kind of track that this package has been struggling on. If they can fix that, I think they've got something they can really build on here, and it can really be a package that they carry for a long time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, let's do our personal top three performers from Kansas. I'll go first with this one. I actually, even though Larson won, I had Denny Hamlin first. He led the most laps. He overcame multiple issues on pit road. He had a couple times where he was trying to get into his pit stall or leave his pit stall. There were other cars kind of in his way and just held him up, and he would be in the front and then he'd fall back to, you know, 5th to 10th, and he'd have to fight his way back to the front again. I don't know if he would have held off Martin Truex, because Martin Truex was coming real hard at the end there, but I think he would have definitely either finished first or second, and would have, we got a great finish regardless, but it would have been cool to see that play out had the caution not came out. But I think he was just overall the best performer this weekend. Then second, and for the third week in a row, I think, we have Noah Gragson, 9th place, 3rd straight top 10 finish. He is driving that car really good right now, and he seems to be in a really good place with the team. I think we were kind of saying, you know, Chase Briscoe might be the best driver within that team, you know, about a month ago, but now it seems like Gragson is definitely challenging him for that spot. And then third, I had Chris Buescher, best finish of the season, literally inches, centimeters away from the win. Just a really good performance from him, and good to see RFK back battling. And he also overcame some big issues. He had some pit crew members over the wall too early, and he fought his way back, obviously almost winning that race. So I have Chris Buescher number three.
Yeah, I kind of cheated a little bit. I have co-number ones, Buescher and Larson, just for that incredible finish that they gave us. The best, obviously the closest in NASCAR history, arguably the best. So, and they both led a significant number of laps throughout the race. It's not like one of them was just snuck up at the end. They both had great days and deserved to be there at the end. And then my two other guys, I have John Hunter Nemechek. It was his best finish since Bristol. Started 29th and ended 13th. So a very solid Sunday for him. And then Brad Keselowski as well. Started 30th, finished 11th. Another guy that worked his way up the field and put in a really solid drive.
Yeah, I looked at both of those guys, Nemechek and Keselowski, because they started so far back and ended up with top 15, almost top 10 finishes. So really good drives from both of them. Let's move to some other news from the week. The big news was the Adrian Newey is officially out at Red Bull. Where do you think he will go? That's the big question that everybody's asking. Which team do you think he'll end up at? Or will he just retire and decide, retire or take a few years off and decide that he just wants to spend some time away from the sport with his family? Or do you think he will end up with another team?
I think retirement's definitely on the table, but I mean, we saw him down in Miami, even though he's not there, you know, now technically he's only working on the hypercar. We still saw him moseying around the grid and looking at all the different cars and seeing what each team was doing, looking at McLaren's upgrades, looking at Ferrari's car. So I think, obviously, we don't know, but I think from an outsider's perspective, it seems like the passion is still there for him to continue and, you know, to have at least one more project in F1. And to me, I think the team that makes the most sense is Ferrari. But I honestly wouldn't be shocked to see him go. You know, we heard some rumors about Williams this past week, which seems like a shocker on its face, but they are an English team, as Newey is. And, you know, they're a team where he has worked there in the past, and potentially they could offer things that other teams couldn't, like maybe a small ownership stake or something along those lines. And even though that would be a big project, maybe too much ground to make up to the top of the field, that may be the kind of thing he's looking for, one last big project before he goes out.
Yeah, Williams would be very, very interesting, especially, like you said, if he gets a little bit of a stake in that team and can become an owner, then he obviously will have more interest in that team doing well. I do think, though, especially with, I know it's a little late because people have already started to look into their 2026 car with the new regulations, but with the new regulations coming up, you know, an opportunity at Williams, he could essentially just start fresh and build that team back up to, is obviously one of the most historic teams in F1. So an opportunity to start fresh with that team would certainly be an interesting proposition for him.
Yeah, and I think it'd be interesting to see him at a team like that where, you know, obviously he has to start fresh, but there would be a lot of ground to make up still at Williams, even though it would be a new car.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be fascinating to see, you know, because then maybe there's not as big of a gap as there has been with Red Bull the last couple of years to the rest of the field. Maybe the top of the field narrows a little bit, and then you get more teams like a Williams or maybe in a couple of years Audi or somebody like that. You might have more teams up there fighting for points and fighting for podiums. And I think that's exciting. That's what the fans want to see, especially after these last couple of years, see as much parity as possible and as many drivers as possible with the chance to score points and get race wins.
The Audi, actually, now thinking about it, the Audi one would be kind of interesting because they have nothing. They're not going to be in next year. They're really starting in 2026. So it would be an interesting idea for him to go straight to that team and build them up from, you know, their very beginnings to have full say in how that car is and, you know, build that team up from the ground up, essentially. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, it would be. And that's one I honestly hadn't considered as much. But, if he was open to moving to Germany, I think that would be a team to watch out for. And, you know, they're very clear that they want to be competitive as early as possible. So what better way to do that than to get a guy like Adrian Newey into your team?
Yeah, that's pretty much the way to do it. How much do you think this will affect Red Bull going forward? Do you think that we'll see a major fall off with them in terms of performance, or do you think that they're just going to kind of continue on their way?
I think it'll have a bigger effect from 2026 onward.
Mm-hmm.
This next year and a half or so, I think maybe you see the rest of the field, you know, start to narrow the gap, but I think there have been signs that might have been happening anyways, even if Newey had stuck around. I don't think that Red Bull all of a sudden is going to be a midfield car or whatnot just because of Newey leaving. There's a lot of other very capable people there, Red Bull on staff, and they still have the best driver on the grid in Verstappen. And it seems like Horner sticking around is one of the best team principals. So I would be surprised to see them take a big leap back. They could, maybe the rest of the field could catch them a little bit, but I still think they're going to be the car to beat this year and probably next year as well.
Yeah, they still have plenty of resources within that organization. So I think, like you said, we will probably see a small drop in performance, especially from 2026, but I don't think they're going to fall off and become, you know, where you see Aston Martin at right now or something like that. I think they'll still be fighting for wins and podiums from 2026 onwards. Let's look ahead for next week in our predictions. We have NASCAR at Darlington and IndyCar at the IMS Road Course starting off the month of May. In IndyCar, a big time for that series. Let's start with NASCAR at Darlington, though. I'll go first. I have Joey Logano getting the win here. We haven't really seen much from him this year or really last year. It's kind of been all down since he won the championship. But since 2021, he has the best finishing position here on average at 9.6, along with a win and two top fives and I believe three top tens. So he seems to, you know, have a good feeling for this track. And I think Joey Logano might be able to get that team and Ford get Ford their first win and get that team back on track where they should be.
Yeah, I'm also going to have a guy who I mentioned earlier and a guy who's looking for his first win of the year, and that's Brad Keselowski. He has 2 seconds and a third this year, but hasn't put it in victory lane. Last year, he finished sixth and fourth at Darlington. I'm going to say he gets the job done this week and puts that car back in victory lane.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. Darlington, I love Darlington, and especially this week with all the throwback cars, it's going to be a very fun race to watch, and that track always produces great racing. And then IndyCar at the IMS Road Course, I'll let you go first with this one.
Yeah, well, I'll let you say your pick when it's your turn, but he was actually going to be my dark horse, a guy to watch out for. But my pick was Will Power. Second in the standings, but no wins this year. Was second last week and was sixth the last time at the Indy Road Course. I'm going to say that Penske gets another win, and that would probably vault Will Power to the top of the standings.
Yeah, Will Power is on that winless streak. I could certainly see him breaking through this week. My pick is going to be Pato O'Ward. He finished second and third here last year. He seems to have a great feeling for this track. I know, obviously, he has that win now that Newgarden's St. Pete win is vacated, but I think he's going to get back on track after a couple bad weeks and get his first real on-track win in quite a while this week at IMS. But I'm going to go a dark horse pick. I think that's certainly worth watching is Christian Lundgaard. I know you had him as your dark horse too. He has three top five finishes in the last four races here. That RLL team always seems to bring good cars to the IMS road course. I know Ray Hall got ran down by Dixon last fall here at the IMS road course. But they always bring a great package here, and I think Lundgaard is the best of those drivers, especially at this track. So I'm going to go with Lundgaard as a dark horse option for the IndyCar IMS road course race.
Yep, that's why he was my dark horse, too, for all those reasons you said. I think he's going to be very competitive this week. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the top five again.
Yeah, not at all. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the podium or even winning the race. Well, I think that's everything for this week. We will be back next week with all of our breakdown analysis from NASCAR at Darlington, IndyCar at the IMS road course, and just any news that pops up during the week. One last thing, I know I mentioned it earlier, but we will have some content coming out shortly. I'm not sure the dates yet from our trip to Miami this past week. We both had a lot of fun down there, so it'll be good to get all that content out for you guys to see. It'll probably be on our Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube page. So I think that's everything for this week.
Yeah, absolutely. So check out our socials when the time comes. We got a lot of great stuff coming up from Miami.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week.